I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know.
And the stadium, even on the road, has gone silent.
That was the scene at last weekend's Alabama-Mississippi State game after Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa went down with a hip injury. And that's where we'll start this week. I'm joined by Bleacher Report's Miren Fader and by Sports Illustrated's Charlotte Welder. Welcome back to both of you.
Hey, Karen.
Thank you, Karen. Thrilled to be here.
All right, Charlotte, fill us in.
So, Tua Tagovailoa, Alabama quarterback, people were worried about his ankle in this game. He had an injured ankle, and that turned out to be the least of his problems. He took a really nasty hit and landed on his hip, and things did not look good. He was screaming in pain in the locker room. I mean, it's just like really, really heartbreaking stuff for a guy who's projected to go number one in the draft. He had surgery. The prognosis is good, but it kind of makes you think, you know, immediately after a college athlete gets hurt like that, people are very quick to say, you know, well, he should have been paid or he shouldn't have been playing in a game they're already winning anyway. And while all of that might be true, I think there's a greater issue here, which is that it shouldn't take someone getting hurt to drive home just how important and how fragile all of these athletes really are. I mean, you know, they're big and strong, and then one thing goes wrong, and it's their future earning potential that's at risk. And thank God Tua seems like he's going to be okay, but he's already slipped out of the first round in most projected mock drafts. And it just really puts everything into perspective about what these kids are risking and putting on the line when they play for free.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to take for people to finally realize, hey, maybe we should change things. You look at how much the coaches make, and it's just jarring. Yeah. And I think we become so desensitized to the disparity, and then something like this happens, and I just feel like we have the same conversations over and over and over again. And meanwhile, kids are really suffering, and some do not make it back.
What's really been interesting to me this week is watching how the reaction of this story is different depending on whether you're from a part of the country where college football is huge or whether you're from a part of the country where college football is not huge. If you're in a college football hotbed, you're hearing Alabama coach Nick Saban suggesting that by playing so soon after an injury, players can, quote, create value for themselves by being great competitors. And you're hearing Tom Fornelli at CBS Sports suggest that we shouldn't be freaking out about Tua's injury because he wasn't the only Alabama player to be injured in that game. Two defensive linemen and a receiver were also injured, and all three of those players also have NFL prospects. So we should all just see this as part of playing college football. And I have just found myself like screaming BS at my computer screen so many times by reading some of the coverage of this injury. I just find it disgusting, Charlotte.
I mean, I think that there's sort of a balance here, right, where these kids are playing for a reason. They want to be playing. And I think to take some of that agency away isn't necessarily fair to the players either, because like there is a reason they're such high level competitors. It's because they're competitive, because they care. And so I do think, unfortunately, it is just a part of college football. I think football is a sport with an almost 100% injury rate. However, I don't think that means that A, it has to be that way, or B, you can't compensate them to make that risk worth it. The real fix is going to come in guaranteeing a little bit of security for the future.
All right, Miren, your turn.
I went to Australia for 2 weeks to profile LaMelo Ball for Bleacher Report. Could not pass down that trip.
No. And yes,
and you might have heard about LaMelo. He is a fantastic basketball player, but really not much is known about him. We know about his father, LaVar. He's outspoken. We know about Lonzo Ball. He's on the Pelicans, but here is this kid who has expectations to be, you know, a top five pick, and he's sent over to Australia after playing in Lithuania the year before. And what I found was a kid deeply introspective about the ways that people exploit him. He was kind of forced into this lifestyle of being a basketball player and one day becoming a professional basketball player. And he really opened up to us about the weight of celebrity. He said to me, people don't look at me as human. People people look at me as a dollar sign. So he's approaching this future, but at the same time, for the first time, he's really opening up about what everything has meant to him up to this point that he's endured.
I was struck by how aware of it all he was.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something both, you know, hopeful about that because you're going in with your eyes open, and also very sad, you know, like mm-hmm. there was a real element of sadness to your story where I wanted to be like, man, I'm glad no one knew who I was until I was like 28 and still very few people do know who I am. You know, I'm like, I'm really glad that I was given a lot of time before I was even remotely public. I cannot imagine growing up and not being completely warped by that.
On the one hand, it is hard to feel bad for a kid who's going to make more money in the first year of his career than I will make in my lifetime. On the other hand, Mirren, you made me really feel bad for LaMelo Ball here. And I'm not sure what got to me the most. Was it that the height of his day seems to be getting an Oreo McFlurry because McDonald's in Australia puts more Oreos in their McFlurries? Or was it that his answer to the suggestion that his dad has ruined his career is, you're not going to turn on your dad, you only get one dad in the world? I mean, this is getting really depressing. So, Mirren, can you give me something, anything to hold on to that will make me think that this kid is going to turn out okay?
Yes, Karen.
Good.
First of all, testament to the McFlurries. They were great.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, not to negate your point, Karen, but that's like a highlight of my day, too.
Okay,
so.
Exactly. LaMelo, for all those things that you mentioned and everything that he's gone through, he is actually miraculously poised. He told me, and this quote didn't make the piece, and I wish it had. It just didn't fit. He said, to be honest with you, Mirren, I just feel like nothing will break me.
Wow.
He has everything in the world trying to use him and exploit him, and he can't really trust anybody. But when I see him in the gym and I see him shooting around, I see this joy in him. And, mm-hmm. you know, Charlotte and I cover a lot of athletes, and we encounter people who love the game and who don't love the game. People who just were able to get by because they were athletic or they knew the right person mm-hmm. or they had some attribute about them that was worthy. LaMelo truly, despite not choosing this game, loves it. And I think he finds refuge in it. And I think that that's going to enable him to at least know that, hey, sometimes it is me, myself, and I, but I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. And there are always McFlurries.
Yes.
All right. So we might all remember that back in April, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred said that he envisions adding two more teams to Major League Baseball, one in the Eastern time zone and one in the Pacific time zone. Well, a guy named Pat Williams was definitely paying attention that day. And this week he announced his desire to bring one of those expansion teams to, drumroll please, Orlando, Florida. So Pat Williams is no joke. He brought the NBA's magic to Orlando. And on the plus side, Orlando is already the largest media market without an MLB team. And apparently 2,000 people are moving to the area every week. Sadly, and I haven't actually researched this number, but I'm pretty sure it's true, 98.7% of those people are already fans of either the Red Sox or the Yankees. I mean, look, the Marlins ranked dead last in attendance last year, barely averaging 10,000 fans per game. The Rays are doing a little better, mostly because they're better on the field, but their attendance is so low that they're considering playing half their games in Montreal. Can we just agree on principle not to put any more Major League Baseball teams in Florida, Charlotte?
Yeah, I'm down with that. I think this is so ridiculously stupid. Like, no one goes to Marlins games. I mean, it doesn't help that Jeter was like a mole for the Yankees and totally blew them up. Yes, I'm putting that conspiracy theory out into the world out loud on NPR. No, I'm just like, what are we doing here? You know, like, yeah. I get that it's a major media market. And first of all, I don't really think baseball needs two more teams to begin with. I think that they're struggling with the 30 that they have. It's a very regional sport. There are maybe like seven big names people know out of these hundreds and hundreds of players. So I don't know that adding is how I would try to deal with falling attendance or with maybe less of an interest in the game. I think I'd kind of try to focus on fixing what we have already. But, you know, what do I know? I'm not a doctor.
Mirren, what's your diagnosis?
Every time this happens, they adding another male team, I just think, God, for the love of God, can we just add another WNBA team?
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, this all-female squad right now on NPR yeah. is motivating me to say that. But yes, I'm just rolling my eyes.
Love that.
You know, for me, the absolute best, and by that I mean, of course, the absolute worst argument for this team in Florida is this idea of, like, do you know how many tourists come to Orlando every day? And it's totally true. And I am, in fact, a baseball fan. But do you know how many better things tourists have to do in Orlando than go to a baseball game?
I mean, I'm sorry. If you're going to Orlando, like, you're not going for baseball. No. You're going for Disney World, and that's literally
that's
it.
I'm going to stand in line for the Millennium Falcon. And if there's extra time, I'm going to stand in line again. That's what's going to happen. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Bleacher Report's Miran Fader and Sports Illustrated's Charlotte Wilder. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.